Hi, I'm Lloyd Nackley. I'm at Oregon State University, North Willamette Research Station. I'm a research and extension agent specialist faculty for nursery and greenhouse crops. And with all my work, I couldn't have done it without a team. And so I worked with Elias Fernandez de Souza at the State University in Norte Fluminense, so North Fluminense in Brazil. And then Jared Cisneros, Galen Wolf, Bruno Pitten, and Dr. Lawrence Oki at UC Davis. Really what I'll be talking about today is how we're using sensor-based irrigation, our sensors to monitor plant growth and optimize our irrigation, and it's going to be a case study in poinsettias. I'll talk a little bit about the value of working with poinsettias and the impacts, the methods, what we found, and what we think it means, and hopefully I'll have some time for questions. That's my goal. So why work with poinsettias? Poinsettias and potted flowering plants in general are a very valuable crop, about $810 million annually. Poinsettias are second in that group behind orchids at $140 million annually. I wanted to provide a little context for what that means. That's three times the value of apricots, three times the value of blackberries, and three times the value of Hawaiian coffee. It's also equal to about three hamburgers at the restaurants here, or one Boeing 787. Thank you. And so it's a valuable crop, and because of that, it has large impacts. But potted flowering plants in general, poinsettias included, are primarily grown more than 50% in two regions, California and Florida. And water is a big issue in both of those places. In California, this figure, the map, California map, comes up a few times, so if you don't recognize it, that's California. It's perennial, it's droughty perennially. It's always a droughty place. It's semi-arid, but it's been historic of late, and we don't know if that's more common or less common, but it's something to be aware of. Florida is obviously less arid, but water management is critical there, and part of their best management practices because of water quality, nutrient control. I have a little quote just to show how water is not cheap. It can be over $1,000 per acre foot for the Southern California growers, so it is very costly. Where we did our work, here's California again, and the little dark area is Yolo County, so that's where Davis is. This was an experiment, a greenhouse experiment, completely randomized. We up-potted four-inch pots, rooted cuttings of the azalea, the poinsettias, and put them on three irrigation treatments. We did not control the moisture content. We did a calendar-based scheduling, so we had a group that was weekly, irrigated every other week, so bi-weekly, and then irrigated every 3 weeks, so a tri-weekly one. We had drip emitters, two per pot. We had 200 parts per million nitrogen, and it was a liquid feed, 20, 90, 29, and 20. We quantified the growing environment. The media we use is the UC Davis mix, so that's one part peat, one part sand, one part redwood compost, amended with dolomite. It's got 57% water holding capacity, 73% porosity, and a bulk density around 0.49. We use the Decagon EC5 volumetric water sensors up in the top corner. We use pyrometers and pyranometers, the Licor light sensors. We had a fairly consistent growing environment as far as temperature, hot, max, and cold. The light environment was, I'd say, highly variable, and that's when they took the glazing off the greenhouses there. We didn't force flowering, so we didn't do any of the photoperiodism, and that was a labor issue. The way we measured the plants, so in this study, so it's been great seeing the different talks in this group because we're looking at some of the same issues, but in different ways. And so this is another way that you can measure plant water use and soil water. So the way we were looking at plant water demand is with sap flow sensors, and that's a picture of our design right here. It's got two fine gauge thermocouples and a chip resistor to provide heat, and then it has measurement that's controlled with a CR1000, and we built our own relay. SatFlow primarily has been used with woody species, where probes were inserted, needle temperature probes were inserted into the bark, but that's inappropriate for fine diameter or small diameter stems, so about less than 2 centimeters diameter stem can create a problem either with damaging the vasculature system or actually impeding the flow of sap. So this is external based. The little pink things are just builder's foam. We modified the design from Clearwater et al. Paper, which is about 10 years old now, but external sap flow sensors. And then this build, so SPAC, is the soil plant air continuum, and the idea of how water goes up essentially is on an inverse potential gradient where tension increases from the soil to the air. So that's theory behind that. What it looks like is with the heat pulse method, we use a way to analyze that, which is the heat pulse ratio. So you look at the peak of temperature 10 seconds before and the coolest point, so the lowest temperature, and 10 seconds before that. So upstream is the dotted line, and downstream is the solid line, and then you compare the ratio over time. We pulse about every 2 minutes over the whole period, so we generated a lot of data. The way that we looked at the supply and the demand, so how much water was available and how much water was needed theoretically, was with the volumetric water content, and this is an average of the three treatments. So the weekly is the dashed, shorter peaks with longer intervals in the tri-weekly period. Demand was based on the Hargreaves-Semeny evaporative demand equation, which uses fewer requirements to estimate evapotranspiration. So it's based primarily on temperature and radiation. And it decreases over time as it got cooler. So that's just natural. So what we found comparing these two, so orange is on, so weekly, biweekly, triweekly. Orange is the potential based on the evaporative demand. Blue is what we measured from the plants. For the weekly, it tracked fairly well, although there were certain periods where they were different, where demand was a lot, or where actual use was a lot less than the potential requirement or the potential use. But you see that ever more on the biweekly and triweekly, where even though the demand was high, the plant was not using very much water. The way that we came up with the stress index is fairly simple, taking that information from the previous slide and then creating a ratio, so 1 minus actual over potential. And then what we did was we compared that to what the volumetric water content was in the pot at those times. And what we found, so here's the stress index, the value that you get from this equation, and then there's the volumetric water content measured by the sensors. And we had one sensor in each pot. And so then over time, you see here's moist, so about 0.5 volumetric water content. And then it decreases in around here for weekly, biweekly, and triweekly at the top. So about 0.28 volumetric water content, we see stress start to increase. For the biweekly was up a little less, so 0.2, and then triweekly at 0.16. And these are representative plants of what they looked like. So they're happy plants, less, and very unhappy plants. Just another way to look at, so not the stress index, but sort of the same information, but for one pot. So here's the blue is the soil moisture water content and the stress index. And as predicted for that one, it was around 0.16, the triweekly. You see the crossover, the intersection, where stress goes up and available water is lower. So the take home from that is that, what do I say? Pessimists rejoice. Like half empty is not necessarily a bad thing. So we've had a few talks actually today, which was fun. I read in the abstract, and it was great to see you do that, John. And then also earlier this week, Dr. Risby. So University of Maryland's been showing that size or you can grow about the same size plants with a lot less water. So we talk about it right now as deficit irrigation, but really what I think we're doing or what we're seeing is surplus irrigation. We're watering way too much, probably twice as much, and that's been talked about today, which is, again, was great to see, because our results show that stress really isn't starting to be evident in the plants, in this case poinsettias, until about 0.2 volumetric water content, which is about half, again, of what people have been saying to do. So John mentioned it, which was really great. But growers really want to aim at 35 to 40. They're freaked out. Dr. Lauren Oakey was a professional grower, and when I suggested we'll do a three-week interval, he was like, well, no, you're going to kill your plants right away. We're not going to see anything. But my goal as a stress physiologist was like, well, okay, we'll see something on their way out. The amazing thing was we didn't see any death. There was no death. So even that really wilty plant, they would revive. So it wouldn't have been saleable like that compared to the healthy one. You wouldn't sell that. But the poinsettias do have an amazing ability from a physiological standpoint to tolerate this drought stress. So what does that mean also? More profit from smaller plants maybe. There was another talk this week that I caught from Texas A&M where they were showing that, where did they grow? They did this switch irrigation, a 40-20 switch, and they were getting smaller plants, but what that was showing is they were able to replace PGRs, so plant growth regulators could be replaced with deficit irrigation. So 40-20 means volumetric water content was at 40, so sort of the standard, and then they switched it down to, again, a deficit irrigation, so a 20. And then if you want to go back to the beginning where I said the two primary growing regions, so California and Florida. So California, this can mean significant cost savings because the price of water is significant there. In Texas, this researcher showed that that's an insignificant cost, but smaller plants equals more plant space or more plant production. Also, and the reason why this one's a little wiltier, evidently a little stress goes a long way. In post-harvest physiology, the slightly stressed poinsettias retained their leaves, retained their stems longer over time. So after they're taken and put on a showroom or something, they measured that to see how they go. And then in Florida, we're looking at the other area, you can do a significant savings in nutrient use. So Raul Cabrera and others have shown how much nutrients in containers are flushed out of their pots in these containerized settings. So if we're using or we're applying about twice as much water than we need, that's twice as much fertilizer too, so you have more nutrient management and costs. I noticed today a couple talks on using matrix potential. So how can you do that? So you can translate it through moisture release curves. So if all you have is these volumetric water contents, but you do want to look at these other stress physiology factors with tension tensiometers, you can compare them with just measuring your soil. And so this is an old figure from the journal in 92, and so it's showing how low water was, or their expected low levels, but I think you guys had 25 or around here, and that's still, according to this soil moisture, enough for poinsettias, and we saw that too. So just a little physiology plug. Size does matter. The bigger plants used more water. So we saw there were some, I don't know if any of you noticed, there were some variabilities in the potential demand that's based on leaf area. So the bigger plants were using more. I think that, well, this is a neat plant to work with because of that, the milky fluid. So it's a euphorbia, right? And so maybe that's providing some of the ability for osmotic adjustments. So, maybe that's one area to look at. And or is the milk providing cavitation? I got to finish up. But cavitation prevention. So there's some neat stuff just from euphorbias in general. I do want to wrap up to take a question if you have any. So I also want to thank Dana Groot and Floribunda. They provided us the poinsettias. And this is some of the team. Them building, Elias and Galen building the sensors. And Bruno and Maggie and Casey, undergrads. And then now I think a PhD candidate working on the measurements. And that's all. Thank you. Adaptive stress? The question was... Yeah, so the question was, any thoughts on adaptation to stress? So yeah, so I have thought about that because that's, I'm also curious. So I was thinking again with the milky sap, you know, we see plants build up osmolytes to increase their ability to pull water from the soil, increase, again, that soil-plant-air continuum. Maybe that, also, I believe poinsettia originally was a Mexican plant, so it's coming from an arid or semi-arid environment, likely. So it's probably some sort of innate thing, yeah, built in. I don't know if you'll ever get a chance to study poinsettia physiology, right, because the big money is, like, getting it flowering timing, but still it's fun background stuff to think about for us scientists. Thank you.